Hello, we are back. We are in Gold Coast, Australia, where it's really hot and it's really nice. We're right by the beach. In fact, it's just over that way, right? Wait.
That way.
Somebody told me that everything in Australia is trying to kill me. Is that true?
Apparently
there's spiders and snakes, and there was that one cab driver that wanted to kill us too, it felt like. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves, tell us who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Erica Harris. I'm a data solution architect.
Okay.
And I work with our customers primarily around big data and analytics solutions.
Fantastic. You, sir?
I'm Aaron Morrison, a cloud solution architect, and work with a lot of enterprise customers, primarily in the Azure space and right across the Azure product suite.
Okay, so let's start out, because I like data myself, not the guy on Star Trek, but just regular large data. If someone has data, what are some things that they should be doing with it right away? We'll start with you.
I guess that's the thing. Companies haven't been really harnessing the power of the data, and so that's what we're here to talk about, how we collect data, not just the data that the company generates themselves, but other sources, and really leveraging information that's relevant to your customers and your business, and joining that with your own data sets to provide really rich insights and improve the customer experience.
So that sounds really good, but then when you show up at a customer, what is it that you're doing with them? Like, what's the first thing you do when you show up and they're like, hey, we have data, we want to use it. What do you do?
Well, I guess the first question is, there's an enormous amount of data there. So what outcome do you want to achieve from that? And how do you want to make that outcome better for your business? So it's about business decisions. And first of all, understanding the data that's there. And a lot of the data that is there is somewhat of a mystery. So you don't know what insights are there until you start working with it. So it's a matter of playing with that data, starting to sift through that data, and trying to identify what it is that's going to influence some of those business decisions and those outcomes.
So would you say it's better to start with a question or to start to see what data you have? Because, look, I've done some machine learning, I've studied it. I've always been like, let's do data science. And you're like, okay, yay, what do we do? Where's the beginning of this process or this journey? What do you say?
I think it really is about what outcome you're trying to drive. So one of the examples we look at is how we use big data in our actual everyday lives. So when you're looking to buy a house, you start to do research, you look at the area you want to live in, you might look at the schools around that area, and you start, what factors are important to you, you start researching that. And so you think about the outcome you're trying to drive. You want to live in a great area, you want a really nice house, and then you start looking at the market. Using big data in a business context, it's just like that. What outcome am I going to drive? And then what bits and pieces of information help enrich that data to give me a really good outcome?
I see. What about you? What do you say? Like, if you're going to a business, I love how you went to personal route and like, hey, you're already doing this.
Yeah.
But if you go into a business, how do you start with it? Like, what is the first thing you do? Is it like, hey, well, what do you want to know?
I think you need to have an objective.
Okay.
And there's no point going in blind, and there's no point experimenting. You need a purpose. So it's developing that sense of purpose. And you'll find things along that way. So as you start to develop that sense of purpose and work towards uncovering the data that you've got, and sort of backtracking through, so where is the data coming from? What can we actually provide? How can we work towards this purpose? And along the way, you're going to find things that are off to the left and off to the right that are insights into other parts of your business. That may create other opportunities, but I think it's a matter of having that purpose first and being driven towards that, because otherwise you're sort of going around a little bit aimlessly, floundering around in circles. So working towards that purpose and then starting to problem solve and uncover the data that you've got, or uncover where the data is coming from or how you might obtain it. And it may trigger off other things, such as starting campaigns with your customers to try and source more data. So you may identify, we're actually missing data that's going to provide a solution to that outcome. So how do we start to get that? So it's driving campaigns, or it may be combining data from different systems and trying to work through and problem solve, how do we get to that outcome?
So let's talk about a concrete example, because I feel like we've hammered home, you have to have an objective.
Yeah.
Can you give me an example of something that you've worked on that you can talk about, obviously, that shows this process?
Yes, certainly. I'm working with a large customer in Melbourne at the moment, and it's around a single view of customer. So this company's quite siloed. There's different businesses servicing different parts of their market. And traditionally, these systems have been kept separate. They're almost like separate companies within a company.
Nice.
And so when you, as a customer, rings up, if I want to talk about this aspect of my account, I talk to these people. If I want to talk to this aspect, it's a different group of people. And there's no communication. And so the person answering the phone doesn't have a single view of me as a customer. So they can't give me the best experience. So it's about, first of all, finding a way to connect all these different systems together and rationalize that data so we know all this information about the customer. Let's put it all together and get a profile and build up what is interesting to them, what's going to make them perhaps purchase more services. Is this customer likely to leave us? Like, do we need to do something to enhance their experience so they stay? And also, internally, it's not just about the customer's experience, but also the internal staff. Empowering them, making them feel like they've got all the information they need to do a really good job. Because then, if they feel like they're doing a great job, they're going to give a better experience for the customer. And so it's pulling all this together and in real time. So as I'm interacting with this company on my smartphone, I might be making changes to my account. When I ring up and follow up, I want that customer service representative to have the latest information about me. And maybe my behaviors might say, hey, look, we've got this other offer. Are you interested in that? And so we'll be using machine learning in there to enrich our experience and get more information and insights about the customer and work out what offers are likely to intrigue them and how to make sure they have a great experience, consume more services with the company and stay on as a customer and also tweet about their experience and, you know, get that word out there so more and more people will come to this company.
So would you say that the objective is to give our customer a better experience with our, I mean, I'm trying to understand the objective and then how you go down from the, what your work back is from the objective. What was the objective in that case?
So this one is specifically, it's an enriching user experience. So it's making the experience better for all users of the system, that's both internal and customers. If we look at different sectors, it might be more around a rationalization project. So we might have plant machinery, we want to operate in a more efficient manner, we might want to look at cost savings or maintaining our machinery in a more efficient manner. So I guess industries will have different specific verticals of the way they're going to be utilizing their data to suit their business.
I love it. Is there an example of something you've worked on that's similar that will give people a sense for what you need to be doing to start out with?
So I guess in terms of a process, a lot of it is trial and error.
That's it.
So you might start off with a data set and you know the objective that you want to work to. So you start to build up that data set, start to model it, start to work through it. Does it fit? Is it going to lead us towards the objective? And it's quite iterative. So you start to go through an iterative process where you're not only working with the data people and the engineers, but you're also working with the business. So you need to make it sensible for the business because it's a business tool.
Sure.
So you're taking that data, you're modeling it, presenting it, getting feedback from the business, going back iteratively, model it again, run it through its cycles until you get it right. And then you'll start to expand data sets and those sort of things. So that's sort of the process. And I think that that's important to remember is it's not shake and bake. It's something that you need to work through, iterate, cycle through, and it's a business and technology conversation. It's not just a technology providing an enormous amount of data and then presenting that to the business. There's the definitions around the data, what makes sense to the business, how do you put it into terms that the business is actually going to understand.
So it's not like this magic dust we put over our business that makes everything. Because I've had people just say stuff like, let's just use machine learning, that'll solve everything. That really doesn't do anything, right?
No.
And so you need to have a clear objective, you need to have a way to work back that. So now we've talked about the approach to actually solving a problem, let's talk about the tools that you that we have that enable people to solve the problems. What are some tools that you're excited about that you're talking about?
Yeah, so obviously, like I said, we need to capture the data first. So we've got lots of great streaming options. And capturing data from either cloud-based systems or even, you know, wearables, devices.
Sure.
So we've got things like IoT Hub and Event Hub to allow us to collect data into the cloud. Then stream analytics, which allows us to then process that data in real time.
Of course.
Perhaps push it out to a big data platform like HD Insight, or maybe we'll pull out to a machine learning API and get some real-time insights about the data as it's flowing through the system. And then the end source might be a data warehouse that's going to provide rich analytic capabilities for internal people. It might be a Power BI dashboard that's providing real-time and also a deeper historical analytical view. and combining all that together.
That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things I've found when working with stuff on Azure, there is this curse of choice. Like, how do you begin to, like, if I'm brand new doing some data stuff on Azure, what are some things that you suggest? Go look at this first, and then you'll start to get a sense for how these things work. What do you say?
That's a good question.
I know.
It's a great question.
I'm trying to add. Because, I mean, like, the thing about it is I've deployed these templates that have, like, these huge boxes of 5 or 6 or 7 different products that are all working together. It's great that we have this template, and then I can start from it and see how it works. But usually, like, an author and a white piece of white paper is the scariest thing. Like, let's just get pen to paper. What would you suggest we start with?
So you put forward an interesting question, and I guess the benefit of Azure is that service composition. So the ability that you can put together a solution from a template, and if there's something that's not working for you or it doesn't quite fit the mold, pull it out. And it's no loss. So being a platform as a service or infrastructure as a service, there is no loss of opportunity there. So you've given it a go, it doesn't work, you haven't wasted an enormous amount of capital or funding, it's still part of the project and it's still moving forwards, but that service that you've chosen or part of the template, you've just pulled it out. And you might insert something else that you know is gonna do a better job. So I think having the conceptual view of what you're trying to achieve and understanding what the products are there and what they're there to do, and then making that product fit, and it's a bit of a jigsaw, but that's the bonus of Azure, right? Is that you're able to insert building blocks as you need to or pull building blocks out when you don't need them.
So let's talk about these templates. Have you used these templates before?
Yeah.
Tell us about them and how they can be helpful in starting them.
It's a really great way. Like, obviously, you can go onto the website and look at different components in isolation. And like you said, it's not a one-size-fits-all. And often there's more than one product that does something really similar. So by using the templates, you can deploy an end-to-end solution. You're ingesting the data at one end, you're processing it normally in more than one way, and then it's coming out the other end and it's providing some sort of insight or an end use. And so it helps you understand, how does this data flow? How do these services hook together? And a lot of the choice isn't binary. It could be, what skills do we already have in our organization? It could be just, like you said, I want to try this. If it doesn't work, I might take this piece out, put another piece in, and enable a different outcome.
So what kind of templates are there? I mean, do you know what these templates are? Maybe there's one that you've used before to get started. Can you tell us about that?
Definitely, there's a couple of really interesting IoT ones, which either simulate things like a building, so getting temperature readings, might have airflow intake type stuff. And we might be looking at temperature fluctuations. So this data will get ingested through an IoT hub. Then from there, we might go into stream analytics. And then we can start processing data and looking at windows of time. So maybe a temperature fluctuation of 1 degree is not a big deal.
Right.
But if it's gone up 10 degrees in a few minutes, that could be a significant issue. And so that might fire off an API. It could actually alert somebody on a mobile phone or a device. We might push it through to a system that records like incidents, and then there'll be an action internally. And obviously all this data feeds into your big data platform, which will give us that rich insight over time, because, you know, there's so much you can glean from like a short window of data. But being able to look at data historically and start seeing patterns that form, is it seasonal, is it fluctuating by month, like is there a pattern that we can only see over a broad period of time?
That brings an interesting question, specifically when it comes to this thing called a Lambda architecture, because you mentioned two kinds of data.
Yeah.
Can you describe those two kinds and why they're very different and how you should treat them differently?
Yeah, so we've got like different velocities of data. So we've got our real-time, very fast, normally very bite-sized chunks of data, which is coming through the real-time or fast path of your Lambda architecture. And then you've got your slower batch, more traditional kind of warehousing data, which could be really large, it could go back a really long way. And so it's a mechanism which allows us to process both sorts of data, but also join them together in a meaningful way to, again, inform. So this little piece of information I'm getting through the fast layer might join with some deeper insights through my slow layer, my batch layer, and give me historical information that makes this data make sense.
All right, so let's see if I'm understanding this. You're saying that you have this data that might be forever old, but then you have this data that's coming in hot.
Yeah.
if I'm doing sort of batch processing, machine learning, I might create models on the cold path, and then on the hot path as it comes in, I can use those models to do prediction on what's coming in real time.
Exactly, yeah.
That's interesting. So do you have to use a template to set these up? Or is there another way to do it? I feel like there's so much good stuff in Azure that people aren't maybe taking advantage of. How do you suggest people start to look into this?
Yeah, a template's a really great way just to kickstart and actually, like I said, see how everything hooks together and maybe use a bit of that predefined template to work out how that would relate to your data. Because
sure.
your data's not going to be the same shape, the same size. It might not even be the same industry.
Of course.
So the template's a really great learning tool and it's a really great demonstration tool, which we use quite often. And that will inform me if I'm learning how to use these things. Yes, you can read the documentation and kind of cobble it together, but if I can click a button, type in three-piece information, and it goes deploys end-to-end solution for me, it's a really great way to kind of get in deep, get in quickly, and see how this will work in your organization.
Awesome. So your talk is on HD Insight in particular, which could be this one piece of a whole set of things. Why don't you describe HD Insight for us, why you think it's important, and how one would even begin to use it?
So HD Insight, I guess, is the bonus of it, first things first, is platform as a service.
Right.
So regardless of the size of your organization, it's something that's available to you. Second thing is a lot of the technical skill sets that you would need to engineer that and build it out, that's all done for you.
Right.
So it's pre-configured, it's, you know, run through a couple of menu items in the Azure portal, put in a couple of configuration parameters, and away it's, you know, it's off and going. I guess the other thing is the expense around infrastructure to build out your nodes and scale out. You don't need to worry about that because it's all managed by Azure in the cloud. So it's quite scalable, and regardless of the size that you want, Azure's the platform that can scale up or scale down to meet your needs. So why is HDI Insight important? I guess from a data processing perspective, it's become the de facto standard for data processing or data transformation. So having that tool set available to you in multiple flavors of HD Insight available in Azure, you've got the right platform to do the data transform that you want. So, you know, the example of having different types of data and different sets of data, being able to transform that data and then correlate events or correlate data sets to produce that outcome. Typically, you don't have data in the same format. So bringing that data together, running that transform over it and processing it and turning it into something that you can then make something of it and query it, I guess that's the bonus of HD Insight. And whether it's batch processing, real-time processing, large scale or small scale, HDI will provide you with all those capabilities.
So is HD Insight just Hadoop on Azure, or is it more than that?
So it is Hadoop on Azure. It's been co-developed with Microsoft and Hortonworks, and we offer it in a number of different flavors. So Hadoop's not a single product. It's a conglomeration of different bits and pieces, building blocks, just like Azure. So there's the standard Hadoop, which is fairly standard.
It's just like a file system, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then we offer different types. So we've got Spark, which is an in-memory processing engine. We've got Kafka in preview at the moment, which allows complex event processing. We've got HBase, which is a NoSQL database. And the beauty of this is it actually allows us to share different data between, or share common data between different flavors of Hadoop. And we can spin these up and spin them down as we need them. So on a normal day-to-day basis, I might just need a regular HD Insight cluster, but I might have periodic processing that I really need to enhance with Spark. So I could, once a month or once a week, however often I do this processing, fire up a Spark cluster, pointing at the same data set, do my processing, push my output back down, and then just delete that cluster. So I only need it for as long as it takes to do the processing.
So I've always wanted to understand Hadoop a little bit better, so I'm glad you're here. My understanding was that Hadoop was just this file system, HDFS.
Yeah.
And what it is, it was a distributed file system. There was this thing called the name node, and there's all these other nodes. But the thing that always scared me about Hadoop was that the name node file registry was always retained in RAM. Is there something that we do in HD Insight that makes it a little more resilient? Because if my RAM goes out, then I've lost all the pointers to all the files. Is there something that we do in Azure to make this a little bit better?
Yeah. So for starters, in Azure, we have two name node configurations.
Oh,
so we've
nice.
Got HA.
So it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the other thing is we externalize the data. So all your data is stored on either our blob storage or data lake, if you've got data lake in that region.
I see.
And so if you delete your cluster or your cluster dies or whatever, or you need to upgrade to the latest version, your data is all kept separate.
Oops. Oh, that's okay. We just got super excited. Just hold on to it. Sorry about that.
Too much gesture.
Yeah, no, we got to use our hands. It's almost like we're in Italy, but all the way to the other side of the world.
Yeah, and the other thing is the metadata. So we actually can also externalize the metadata repositories.
I see.
So all your Hive tables, you define those in Hive.
Yeah, Hive.
And that metadata, instead of keeping it local to the cluster, we can put that into a SQL database. So again, if we decide we need to delete our cluster, our metadata and our actual data is all kept completely separate, so the cluster just becomes a disposable entity.
So it's like a virtual HDFS over our traditional storage mechanism.
That's right.
That's actually quite clever, right? Because the first time I read this, I thought, holy cow, if my name node goes out and the RAM is gone, all the file allocation table, what it used to be, that's completely destroyed. But you're saying that in HD Insight, this is a little bit more.
Yeah. It also means we don't need to size our cluster for data. So if we had a VM farm that we were setting up as a Hadoop cluster and we had so much storage we needed, particularly in a really large instance, our VMs are limited with how much data you can physically attach, how much storage.
Right.
With this, because it's separate, all you need to size for is your compute and your memory. You don't need to size for data. And it also means if we scale up and scale down, we're not just redistributing your storage every time we do that.
So that's amazing. So you're getting all the benefits of a distributed file system without all of the, well, with some drawbacks, but different ones that are a little bit more resilient.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So we have about a couple minutes left. Where can people go to find out more about HD Insight and to maybe get started with their own cluster?
Yeah, we've got lots of great information in the Azure Help documentation pages and lots of really great examples also on GitHub. So you can get in, have a look at what a Spark job would look like, what a MapReduce job would look like, and you know, what is the difference between Spark, HBase, and what scenarios would I use either one of those for?
Awesome. Well, this has been so informative. We've got a little bit of taste of how to use data on Azure. We've talked specifically about the architecture. We talked about Lambda architecture. And then we also got into HD Insight. Very informative. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. We're going to go to a little break, and we have another guest coming up, Ken Thompson. What is he talking about? I don't know, but it's going to be good. We'll see you after the break.